It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The president has made very clear that he's not happy with the Senate. I hope that the meeting that he had with Mitch McConnell this week will lead to a new era where we work together and there's more consultation, more harmony, fewer tweets and fewer attacks.
What's your confidence level of Mitch McConnell as your leader right now?
Very high.
You have no issues with him. What do you make of the Steve Bannon attempts to try an atmosphere that would chase him out of his leadership position?
I think what Steve Bannon is trying to do is completely inappropriate and also inconceivable to me. He's not looking at how people vote on issues that matter to President Trump. He's looking at whether or not they support Mitch McConnell as majority leader. Mitch McConnell is key to President Trump's ability to get tax reform through, for example. So I don't understand Mr. Bannon's approach. Obviously, he has the right to say or do whatever he wants,
right.
But I certainly don't think that it is at all constructive.
All right, Senator Susan Collins, I will leave it there. Republican from Maine, good to see you.
Thank you.
We'll have you back for another couple of years at least.
Thank you.
All right.
All right, well, that was Susan Collins on the Sunday show. This is Sandy Rios, by the way, on the Monday show. Susan Collins being interviewed by Jake Tapper, and you notice the tag. I should play it in reverse where Jake says, we're so glad to have you back for at least two more years. The Jake Tapper, who is not exactly a conservative Republican, really happy that Republican Susan Collins is going to stay in her seat and not run for governor in Maine. Okay, so you heard all of that. You hear what's going on. I think you probably know that there is a big division, shall we could say huge division, we could say that, between the Republicans right now and the upcoming 2018 elections. And I want to spend a few minutes talking about that because it's going to affect all of us. I think it's no secret that I have hit this microphone pretty heavily almost every day about my disgust for Republican leadership. And I haven't changed my mind, by the way, in case you think I'm leading up to doing that. I'm not. But I think the lines are being drawn about where this fight is going to come down. And it is most definitely a fight. Mitch McConnell was on several shows yesterday, but he was also on Fox. Dana Perino was filling in for Chris Wallace. And he was asked about his view of Steve Bannon. Now, I want you to listen, and then I have a lot of things I want to tell you. So here it is. Fox News leader Mitch McConnell.
This revolt is going from Alabama to Arizona. The last couple of days, Mitch has been saying this big thing. Hey, you got to win. You know, winners make policy, losers go home. Hey, Mitch, note to self, Mitch. Big Luther Strange and little Bobby Corker are both going home. These people, Mitch, it's 2-0.
And even the president didn't really dispute Bannon's frustration with the Senate Republicans.
Myself, I'll be honest, they are not getting the job done. And I can understand where Steve Bannon's coming from, because I'm not happy about it, and a lot of people aren't happy about it.
So, Senator McConnell, is tax reform a must-pass? And if you get that legislative success, is it the antidote to Steve Bannon's agitation against you?
Well, let me just say, with regard to the element you were referring to here, they've been out there for a number of years. They cost us 5 Senate seats in 2010 and 2012. We would have gotten the majority sooner, but for the fact that they were able to nominate people who could not win in November. In 14, they were defeated everywhere. In 16, they were defeated everywhere. And the difference is we've been in the majority in 2014 and 2016, two Congresses in a row. Look, this is not about personalities. This is about achievement. And in order to make policy, you have to actually win the election. The kind of people that are supported by the element that you've just been referring to are specialists in defeating Republican candidates in November. And that's what this inter-party skirmish is about. Our goal is to nominate people in the primaries next year who can actually win, and the people who win will be the ones who enact the president's agenda.
Okay, so let's talk about this. The element that you see, the element you're referring to Steve Bannon, referring to many of us who feel that leadership has been feckless. That's the kindest word I can think of, actually. We are the element that Mitch McConnell is talking about. And so he points out in that this element is what caused us to lose five Senate seats from 2010 to 2012. In another interview, he enumerates who those people are. He talks about, and now the names are not going to come to me, Christine O'Donnell, the candidate in Indiana, the candidate in Missouri. I remember the states. But you know what? What he didn't mention, the fact that the Mitch McConnell PAC, the Senate PAC that reelects incumbents, went into these districts and literally destroyed these people one at a time. I remember really well. You can say what you will about Christine O'Donnell, but I remember sitting watching my television when Karl Rove, working hand in glove with Mitch McConnell, Christine was getting ready to win the nomination, and Karl Rove absolutely destroyed her. Absolutely destroyed her with his tongue. And at that time, Karl still had some people trusted him to some extent. I think the trust is pretty much obliterated right now. That's my personal opinion. But it was still there then. He destroyed her before the election ever took place. And I have to remind you that Mitch McConnell's PAC spent $21 million in Alabama to defeat Roy Moore. They told lies about him. They called him a liar. They said that he was stealing money. They said that his, I don't know what they said about his wife. They talked about his, let's just say they magnified his son's misdemeanor, hunting violations, whispering them around. They whispered that he was mentally unstable. And on it goes. That was Mitch McConnell, you know. And I have to tell you that if Judge Roy Moore loses in Alabama, they will be thrilled. Do not expect that they will do anything other than to try to destroy Roy Moore, which takes me off track just a little bit, but I think I'm going to stop and go off track. A Fox poll came out earlier last week showing that Judge Roy Moore was tied with the attorney, Doug Jones, 42% to 42%. Now, that's one poll. And then another poll came out from Real Clear Politics that showed that Roy Moore is ahead by 4.4 points, the average of the polls. One thing I notice about this, I'm holding a Washington Examiner report. Every picture that they use now to portray Judge Roy Moore is a picture of him with his cowboy hat and his gun, because you see that makes him look silly. So that's the one they show over and over again. And the reason he carried a gun to the rally, as I recall, was because they were his opponent, Luther Strange, in the primary, had the endorsement of the National Rifle Association, and they were trying to hint that Justice Moore wasn't, you know, a gun advocate. And he brought his gun to show them, yeah, he actually is, because he actually carries. So he brought his gun for that purpose. But that's the picture that they use now to make him look like a fool, which is what they want to portray him as, because they desperately want him to lose. Because if the establishment, Mitch McConnell and Karl Rove, lose in Alabama, that means that Steve Bannon, for one thing, had a victory, and that is just really hard for them to take, and it also scares them to death for the other incumbents. And it also it will be terrible from their perspective to have a Senator Roy Moore, a nightmare. He's impossible to manage. He'll actually be principled. He will not bend to their will, and heaven forbid that. By the way, another poll out of Huntsville, this is dated October the 19th, shows that Roy Moore is 11 points ahead. So I don't know what to believe, except that I'll tell you this. All the stops will be pulled out to destroy Justice Moore. And you might recall that after Judge Moore won the primary, that the the whatever fund it is that is Mitch McConnell's buddies that poured $20 million into defeating Moore, said that they would help, you know, whoever the Republican was, they would help. My sources tell me they're giving absolutely zero help to Judge Roy Moore. And so just so you know, people in Alabama, that's kind of what's happening. And now there's an article out this morning that traces the history of Doug Jones, who was the Democratic opponent to Judge Roy Moore. And we're learning that Doug Jones is very tied to George Soros. In fact, the organization that he worked with was the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University Law School, received from Soros Open Society Foundation a total of $7,466,000 from the years 2000 to 2010 alone. $7,466,000. So the Brennan Center released a 69-page document titled Federal Prosecution for the 21st Century, and Jones served as the co-chair for the panel that prepared that report. The report itself acknowledges the support of Soros Open Society Foundation. You can read more about it. It has to do with U.S. attorneys seeking social justice. It started under the Obama administration, and Doug Jones was the person who led that, it would seem, certainly echoing the sentiments of Barack Obama. He was appointed by Bill Clinton to be U.S. attorney, and so that's Doug Jones, who was Roy Moore's opponent. And yet Senator McConnell and Karl Rove are hoping, of course, that Judge Moore will lose. They would rather Doug Jones, funded by Soros, is the winner in Alabama. And that's the way things are. You know, we saw what they did in Mississippi to Chris McDaniel and Thad Cochran. Do you remember that? I remember that. We talked about it a great deal. They actually did, let's see, how can I word this? McConnell and his friends went into Mississippi, and in order to help Thad Cochran and pull him over the line, by the way, Chris McDaniel nearly beat him. He lost by 3,500 votes statewide. They ask Democrats to cross over and vote for Thad Cochran. And they sent out flyers saying that Chris McDaniel was a racist. I don't remember the exact wording, but that was the sentiment. Chris McDaniel's a racist. So they ginned up the racial wounds of Mississippi black Democrats to go in and vote for Thad Cochran. They also covered the fact that Mr. Cochran at the time was cohabitating with a secretary when his wife was in a nursing home. And that was a big issue in Mississippi. And that's not the kind of people that Mississippi likes to nominate. They expect better of their people. And so it was a mess. It was just a mess. And so that's what they did in order to make sure that Thad Cochran kept his seat. And, of course, Mr. Cochran, I don't know what his condition is. Let's just say we don't know what he's doing because we don't ever hear from him, except that he gets brought out from the hospital to vote a certain way, which is what happened last week. And so this is what happens. You know, they reelect the incumbents because they can control and get their votes. And let's go back to what Mitch McConnell said in that interview on Fox News. He said, we in 2014 and 2016, we nominate candidates who could actually win. And we took the Senate in 2014 and kept it in 2016. Then he said, the winners of elections make policies and the losers go home and go into some other line of work. We're trying to maintain this majority so we can achieve the goals that the president and ourselves share. Really? Really? I would like, you know, you to raise your hand if you can list a goal that Mitch McConnell and the president share besides the nomination of the Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch. Can you think of anything that the Senate has done under Mitch McConnell that was one of the things that Donald Trump campaigned on? Just asking, because they're claiming they're all about it. Yes, they've been faithful. Yes, of course they have. And he says, it's all about whether or not we can maintain control and achieve the things that the president and ourselves want to achieve. Maintain control. You better believe that's the one true phrase that he gave in that interview with Dana Perino on Fox News. I've got so much more to say about this, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.
Here for your encouragement and your walk with God. This is David Wolin with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. The disciples had gone into a town in Samaria to buy food. And when they returned, they found Jesus speaking with a Samaritan woman, which most first century Jews would have considered disgraceful. John 4:27 tells us they marveled that he was talking with a woman, but no one said, "What do you seek?" or "Why are you talking with her?" It feels like a footnote in the story, but the detail matters. Jesus' disciples were looking past the Samaritan woman as though she didn't exist. They didn't even acknowledge her presence. And personally, I find that convicting. Could it be that you and I have people in our lives who we ignore, but that Jesus wants us to notice like he does? Get daily insight into God's Word with Anchor Devotional. Visit getanchor.com.
Putting life in perspective with Harry Reeder.
Let me give you one big problem that's just unbelievably present today. We let our teenage children choose the churches that we go to as parents. I'm absolutely flabbergasted at that the children, teenagers, are in charge of the spiritual diet of the family. You wouldn't do it with the physical diet. You wouldn't take your children out to the grocery store and say, "Okay, y'all buy the groceries." Well, you come home with Oreos and ice cream and Cheez-Its and soft drinks and then say, "Well, but they're eating something and maybe they'll like spinach. Maybe they'll like vegetables later on in life." No, we sit them down. We say, "Here, we want to put a good meal in front of you so we can teach you what's good for you."
For additional Christian resources from Harry Reeder, download the Briarwood PCA app. Available at the App Store, Google Play, Amazon, and the Windows Store. In Perspective, visit us at briarwood.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Koh, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Former President Bush is facing fierce backlash for delivering a speech that was seen as critical of President Trump. Listeners to my national radio show called Bush's comments disgraceful, appalling, even more so because President Bush never criticized President Obama, ever. He explained why in a 2014 interview on Fox News Channel.
I don't think it's good for the country to have a former president undermine a current president. I think it's bad for the presidency, for that matter.
So when Barack Obama shoved Obamacare down our throats, George Bush turned the other way. When he apologized for Americans on foreign soil, George Bush was silent. When Obama declared a war on police officers, Bush was AWOL. And when Barack Obama vowed to fundamentally transform America, George W. Bush stood down. Mission accomplished. So maybe Bush was just showing his true colors, coming out of the closet as an establishment Republican swamp thing. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Hey, Sandy Rios back with you. It's nice to be back in my studio, but I really loved being in Tupelo. And by the way, you just amaze me. We reached our goal last Thursday for Share-a-thon. I don't know what the final total was. Maybe you guys can tell me back there in Tupelo, but I know that we reached our goal, and we always do. I've said to you before, but I just had to repeat it. You know, I've been in radio for a long time, and I've done many, many asks, many, many campaigns for various ministries. I have never seen an audience be as responsive as the audience for American Family Radio, as generous consistently. And I really do think, you know, I always said I couldn't be a salesperson. I couldn't, because I could never sell something that I didn't believe in. And I think the reason why you give so freely, and some of you, you know, this is a hard time. Many of you have been through these disasters all over the country. Some of them have hit the hardest, the hearts of some of our listening areas, whether it's Texas or Louisiana, the other places. But I think the reason that you give so freely is because there is a trust. And I'm so honored to be part of an organization like the American Family Association and American Family Radio, where there is such incredible trust. And when I ask you to give money, I don't have to worry, because I know it's going to be spent well. So it's a partnership, and you deserve tremendous praise for your generosity. And so I'm giving it. let me just say, you guys are the best. And it just shows me that you're serious about your faith in Christ. You're serious about your role in this world to be the Great Commission, to teach them all things whatsoever I've commanded you. Not just the gospel message, not leaving it at the gospel message, but then what else did Jesus teach about what's right and what's wrong and how we should conduct ourselves, and that God is in everything. We bring our faith to everything, and that, yes, that means government, it means politics, it means policy, it means how we hold our officials accountable. It means all of that. It is the full picture. It's the full breadth of what it means to be Christian. It's all of life. It's the music you listen to. It's how you spend your money. It's everything that you do and you think. Everything. It's in Him that we live and move and have our being. And that includes the daily news, and that includes what's happening in Washington and in your state capitals. And so I appreciate and love the fact that you get that. And so we're trying to get other people to be motivated to understand that. So, and by the way, just a personal thing, I will be in Virginia by Richmond this Thursday night speaking at 7 o'clock at the Goochland High School Auditorium. It's going to start at 7. There's no charge, and we would love to see you down there. Congressman Dave Bratt will be with me, and we'll be talking about, you know, Virginia's got a big election coming up, as do many of the states. And so we'll be talking about just their particular issues and also just in general about being involved, as we talk about every single day. So I hope you'll come and join us at Goochland High School this Thursday night at 7 o'clock. That's in just outside of Richmond. All right, so I was talking about Mitch McConnell and his appearance on Fox News Sunday, talking about how, you know, that element, like the Steve Bannon element, that element, we've dealt with this element before, he said, and that element caused us to lose 5 Senate seats. Well, really, actually, the truth is, the reason that those candidates, not the only reason, I recognize, but you know what? No one can win $20 million, hardly, except Judge Warmore did win in spite of it, when $20 million is spent in your state, and it's spent on picking out something you may or may not have done, could just be made up from whole cloth and magnifying it in flyers and brochures and, you know, television ads, you know, telling everyone how horrible you are, and then telling us that conservatives can't win in primaries. They can't win. That's what Mitch McConnell said. They can't win, you see. So they poured their money into people like now we have that fill the Senate that really are weak and worthless. Yes, I go on record as saying for the most part. It's stunning. So they caused it to happen, and then they blame conservatism. So this is how the game is played. But I think, as they say, the jig is up. I think that people are finally understanding what's going on here. And by the way, just to drive home what Mitch McConnell sounds so politic and sort of gentlemanly in that interview, but while he's being so maybe gentlemanly and deceitful, his former chief of staff is not so politic. He, in an interview, let's see, this is what he said. Where is this interview? It's Mitch McConnell's former chief of staff. His name is Josh Holmes, and this is what he said. In 2018, we ought to revisit this question and find out if these people are still happy to be associated with Bannon. When you're facing voters, I'd take one of the most successful majority leaders in history over a white supremacist any day. So you see how this game is played. So Steve Bannon is a white supremacist, in case you didn't know. Of course, that's what the left has been trying to tag him with for some time, and so are the Never Trumpers, that Steve Bannon is a white supremacist, which is an absolute lie. Then they use the term alt-right. In fact, that letter from Southern Baptist pastors recently that upset me so much repeats it, and accuses President Trump of having 3 members of the alt-right in your administration. That is just ludicrous, whatever the heck alt-right means. And, of course, alt-right to many people, not properly understood, means racist, means white supremacist. It is a language matters. And in fact, the old Marxists and the young ones, too, understand that. That's why they use terms to destroy people. So we have the chief of staff, former for Mitch McConnell, saying that Steve Bannon is a white supremacist. So you see how this is played? You see? You get this? So, but now here's the deal. This is very interesting to me. We have a lot of, what's happened is that Steve Bannon has gotten a lot of the supporters to the Mitch McConnell faction and the Karl Rove pack have now, are deserting them and going over to this whole new way of thinking. Maybe we might consider electing people that would actually get something done. And so they are withdrawing their money, and Mitch McConnell, I'm not saying all of them, but I think a lot of them are, Mitch McConnell and the people surrounding him are nervous, as are senators. Remember, if you don't believe that, remember that Lindsey Graham said after, right before Roy Moore faced off with Luther Strange in Alabama, said, we hope he doesn't win, meaning Judge Moore, because if he wins, the rest of us are in big trouble. So Lindsey Graham just said, you know, what's going on. He just spelled it out for us. They are nervous. And then, of course, immediately Bob Corker resigned. So we know where he stood on that. So let me just give you a rundown here. I'll tell you this way. The Hill is reporting. I've seen this in other sources, but The Hill does a great article on this, actually. And the title is GOP Senate Hopefuls Reluctant to Back McConnell as Leader. So in various states around the country where candidates are now challenging incumbents, and there are several of them, Josh Mandel is not challenging an incumbent. He's challenging, he's got an unusual name, is the Democrat there, whose name just now escapes me. But anyway, Josh Mandel is the treasurer, really favored to win, doing very well. And then, of course, we've got Kelly Ward in Arizona, Danny Tarkanian in Nevada. They're challenging Republican incumbents, and Danny Tarkanian is challenging Dean Heller in Nevada, and Kelly Ward, of course, is challenging Jeff Flake in Arizona. Those are just two, and there's many, actually. There's the challenge in Mississippi. It looks like Chris McDaniel may run against Senator Roger Wicker. And by the way, the New York Times has an old article on that this morning about how and this is their title, Conservatives with Bannon's Help Look for Revenge in Mississippi, because they remember how McConnell and his faction spent so much money down in Mississippi to make sure that Thad Cochran retained his seat. And actually, some would say, and I think this is probably true, that Chris McDaniel had that election completely stolen, because McConnell and his faction, as I said earlier, stirred up racial divisions and got, by hook or by crook, got black Democrats to go vote in that primary, on that special election, because they were not barred from it. They didn't have to be Republicans. And that's likely what caused Chris McDaniel to lose. And now Chris is thinking about taking on Roger Wicker. Roger Wicker is probably certainly more popular and more has more favor than Thad Cochran in the final analysis. But I guess the problem for some is that Roger Wicker is part of the leadership now. He's joined the leadership team behind Mitch McConnell. So Senator Wicker is now trying to distance himself from Mitch McConnell. He sent out some letter signed by eight other senators, encouraging Senator McConnell to work harder, basically. And some think that that's just a cover because he's trying to distance himself without distancing himself. I don't know. But we're going to be following these races, so I'll tell you more as I know more. But we can see that as they track the nearly two dozen Senate candidates who are running in 2018, none of them are out and out endorsing Mitch McConnell. Now, some are stronger in their language than others, but so far they're not willing to do that. So that's really interesting. And by the way, in North Carolina, Pastor Mark Harris is running against Representative Rob Pittenger, who is an incumbent. And this is, of course, in Congress. Now, here's the interesting twist. You might remember that Mark Harris nearly beat Pittenger. It might be Pittenger. I'm not sure. I'm sorry. Pittenger or Pittenger. Beat him by just 134 votes. Pittenger lost. Oh, gosh, I can't speak. I'm going to try this again. Mark Harris lost to Pittenger by just 134 votes in a special election. So Pastor Mark Harris is challenging Pittenger again. Pittenger is being backed by Karl Rove. So, you know, I've already explained to you why that might be a problem for Pittenger. In fact, Rove just wrote an op-ed in which he called Bannon's war against the Republican establishment a jihad. He attacked conservative candidates like Kelly Ward, Danny Tarkanian, and Roy Moore. Rove claimed that pollster Nate Silver that the establishment Republican candidates remain in line with the president's agenda and even voted along the president's agenda 90% of the time. You know, I don't know. I don't know about that. I know that I just think of one person's score. You know, Roger Wicker has like a 33% score by conservative review. I doubt they're asking if which votes he took with President Trump. It's an overall rating of their votes. I have to tell you that that's totally misleading. I mean, honestly, any of you, what has President Trump campaigned on that these Republican senators actually endorsed, or the House leadership? Really? What have they done that the president actually wanted? What have they accomplished? I can't think of anything really apart from, in the Senate, confirming the Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch. So there may be some slight small things, but none of the big things have been passed. So that's just ludicrous to me. But I've said enough about that. But that's the 2018 election. And could I just ask you again, if you are as upset about what's going on in the country, I actually think we're on the precipice of making some ground here. And by say we, I'm talking about people who believe in our Constitution, who want to restore the rule of law, who embrace the things that President Trump campaigned on, because it was a list of wonderful things. That's why he won, I think. And so if you still embrace those things and you're discouraged that they have, like, repealing Obamacare, and you'd like to see something happen, then we can't quit yet. You just can't quit yet, because 2018 is coming up. And so I'm going to ask you, as I've said before, I'm going to try to sort of introduce you to various candidates around the country and different races. You should pick one, pick two, and get involved. You don't have to be in their state. You could make phone calls from your own living or your own home, you know, on behalf of a candidate. You could give money to anyone that you believe in, anywhere. And you could help a candidate. You could contact all the people you know in various states and ask them to support a candidate because you believe in them. There are lots of things that you can do. And let me remind you also that the American Family Association will have it in place. We don't have it yet. It's too soon. A great voter guide, one of the best in the country, that will help you sort of assess candidates, where they stand on the issues. And that will be a great help to you when we get to 2018. But we are actually there. And as I've said to you before, please, 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 imprint this in your mind. Can you see now from all this talking I've done about this 2018 race that what happens in the primary really is more important? It's as important. It's crucial. The only way conservatives can get into these elections, can even get into Congress, is if you are active in the primaries. So I think the first primary is next June. And actually, I can't recall which race it is. It might be Mississippi. The primary is key. The primary is crucial. So you can't snooze through the primaries and then finally come out to the general election, which is, I think, what many Christians have done forever. And they get the voting guides and then they go out to the polls. But they really don't have a choice because they've got then Karl Rove, Mitch McConnell, chosen candidates. And it's too late by then. It's just too late. And that's why the Senate acts and behaves the way it does. That's why the House behaves the way it does. And that's why Paul Ryan is still in leadership, and they're having so much trouble getting him out. He should have been out a long time ago. Boehner should have been out a long time ago, but they padded their ranks. They had a system. They got these huge PACs together that raised tons of money and helped their buddies win, and they defeated conservatives in the primaries. They were very strategic about it, and trust me, when Mitch McConnell says, we're going to take back control, oh, he meant it, and he's very good at it. That's what he's really good at, and so is Karl Rove. But maybe their methods have been disrupted by people like Steve Bannon and others. So there you go. That's the rundown. But I have more to say, so stay with me. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Such are the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life of its possessors. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. The American people are finally getting the truth on the Southern Poverty Law Center. Here's what Greg Gutfeld of The Five on the Fox News Channel had to say. This poverty center has a $320 million endowment and chucks almost 20% of it into offshore accounts. We're talking Cayman Islands stuff. They paid out $20 million in salaries in 2015, but provided just $61,000 in legal assistance. So the Southern Poverty Law Center appears to have no poverty and do virtually no law.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Friendships is an all-volunteer ministry helping the needy in the U.S. and abroad. There's an opportunity for you to care for Syrian war victims at Friendships Medical Field Clinic and Base in the Golan Heights. Among the positions available are doctors, nurses, dentists, interpreters, as well as personnel for operating the facility. For details, visit friendships.org or call 337-433-5022. Again, 337-433-5022.
Then Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth
has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations."
As believers, we're called to make disciples of all nations. This is Bert Harper. Join me for Exploring Missions, revealing the hearts of missionaries, their stories, and lives. Across the world or across town, Exploring Missions, Sunday afternoons at 1 Central on American Family Radio.
I feel so hopeless.
Is there any hope? I just feel like there's no hope at all.
Is there any hope?
Get hope.
Last month, I came across Psalms 23 in the Bible.
That's TWR President Lauren Libby.
I was impressed with, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." It occurred to me that since Jesus is my shepherd, provider, and protector, I should not want. God is committed to the needs in our lives, not necessarily wants. Debt is taking future resources, emotionally, physically, financially, or spiritual resources, to satisfy current wants, creating a gap or a deficit, and thus creating a debt. Since Jesus is my shepherd, the one who provides and protects me, I have the ability not to be enslaved by my wants. Now that gives hope.
Need more hope? We have resources waiting for you, including a free devotional. You'll find them at GetHopeRadio.com. That's GetHopeRadio.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. In Washington these days, character and dignity are in short supply. It was heartening to see both exhibited magnificently last week by White House Chief of Staff John Kelly. At a press briefing, the retired four-star Marine general spoke poignantly but powerfully about official expressions of condolences for the sacrifice of those killed in action. General Kelly knows firsthand what is entailed. While still on active duty, he lost a son, also a combat Marine, in Afghanistan. He mourned the fact that in America today, it is fair game to demean or otherwise exploit, especially politically, our once sacred women, faith, Gold Star families, and now even the fallen. Despite determined efforts to deflect attention from his message, we owe General Kelly and all those he represents not only our admiration, but a return to the conduct befitting a great and grateful nation. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. We have a radio special coming up this week. It's featuring our friend, Dr. Robert Jeffress, senior pastor, of course, of the First Baptist Church in Dallas. He's a Fox News contributor, author, and he's host of a daily radio program. I always enjoy hearing Dr. Jeffress speak on Pathway to Victory. And so Dr. Jeffress is going to be talking about how God is at work among his people. And he's going to talk about a number of current events. And so that's going to happen. They're going to be three different times. The first one is this Thursday at 2:30 Central Time. This Thursday, October the 26th at 2:30 Central Time. So you might want to make a note of that and tune in, have your friends tune in, and listen to what Dr. Jeffress has to say in God We Trust, Hope for America. It's a radio special that we're airing this Thursday, 2:30 Central Time. Last week, of course, a lot of things happened that we didn't have much time to talk about, so I want to go back and pick up a few things. You may recall that there were several, what is it, I think four different military men killed in Niger last week. And by the way, I'm hoping Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer can join us tomorrow to talk about that and the details of it. Don't want to get into that today. But the president called the widow of one of those. It was Sergeant LaDavid Johnson who was killed. And he called her widow to give his condolences. Well, evidently, a congresswoman was listening in on that call. And she said that President Trump was insensitive. That's my words, basically. She's saying he's insensitive. She reported that he said Johnson knew what he signed up for. Basically, that's what she reported that he said. Of course, that was lifted out of context, and she went out over television talking about that. And I'm trying to find her name for you. Wilson, Frederica Wilson from Florida. So there's more to say about her, but that's how this all started. So John Kelly, who was the chief of staff, retired general, also Gold Star father, his son was killed, came out before the press corps last week. I think we posted the entire thing on our Facebook page, and we'll do that again. But I just want you to hear a couple of excerpts because he is responding to this congresswoman's criticism of the president, and he's also responding to just the politicization of the deaths of these men in combat duty. And so this is what he had to say.
Hours after my son was killed, his friends were calling us from Afghanistan, telling us what a great guy he was. Those are the only phone calls that really matter. And yeah, the letters count to a degree, but there's not much that really can take the edge off what a family member is going through. So some presidents have elected to call. All presidents, I believe, have elected to send letters. If you elect to call a family like this, it is about the most difficult thing you could imagine. There's no perfect way to make that phone call. When I took this job and talked to President Trump about how to do it, my first recommendation was he not do it because it's not the phone call that parents, family members are looking forward to. It's nice to do, in my opinion, in any event. He asked me about previous presidents, and I said I can tell you that President Obama, who was my commander-in-chief when I was on active duty, did not call my family. That was not a criticism. That was just to simply say, I don't believe President Obama called. That's not a negative thing. I don't believe President Bush called in all cases. I don't believe any president, particularly when the casualty rates are very, very high, that presidents call. But I believe they all write. So when I gave that explanation to our president 3 days ago, he elected to make phone calls in the case of the four young men who we lost in Niger at the earlier part of this month.
All right, so that's just part of it. I'm going to play another clip in just a second, but he goes on to say, and he's right, you know, the tough thing was for the president to call. How many of you rush to the funeral home when somebody loses a loved one in a violent, surprising way? How many of you rush to the hospital to comfort someone who's had a diagnosis that, you know, they don't have long to live? I don't think most people really relish those moments or look forward to them. But those of us, of course, in ministry are called upon. We must do that. We must. And I'm not talking about President Trump being in ministry, so don't misunderstand me. I'm just saying the thing is, when you are in leadership, then you'd have to do some really tough things. And President Trump did the toughest thing. He did call. So Frederica Wilson comes forward and criticizes him, repeats what he said. And General Kelly was pretty appalled by it. I don't know if you're going to hear all of that. I think in this clip, he addresses his feelings about that. Let's listen.
Let me tell you what my best friend, Joe Dunford, told me, because he was my casualty officer. He said, Kel, he was doing exactly what he wanted to do when he was killed. He knew what he was getting into by joining that 1%. He knew what the possibilities were because we're at war. And when he died, in the four cases we're talking about, in Niger, my son's case in Afghanistan, when he died, he was surrounded by the best men on this earth, his friends. That's what the president tried to say to four families the other day. I was stunned when I came to work yesterday morning and brokenhearted at what I saw a member of Congress doing. A member of Congress who listened in on a phone call from the President of the United States to a young wife, and in his way tried to express that opinion. He's a brave man, a fallen hero. He knew what he was getting himself into because he enlisted. There's no reason to enlist. He enlisted. And he was where he wanted to be, exactly where he wanted to be, with exactly the people he wanted to be with when his life was taken. That was the message. That was the message that was transmitted.
All right. And then he goes on, John Kelly went on to open up to questions to reporters, but he refused to recognize any reporter who did not know a Gold Star family. He also, in his own way, his own gentlemanly way, from my mind, rebuked them. He said, "We don't criticize you because none of you have served. None of you have made that sacrifice. None of you know what this is about. Only 1% do." And then he also closed by saying, you know, please, our men and women are on the battlefield right now, serving all over the world. This is the important thing. You know, don't turn this into something political. It's a really moving speech. He actually broke down a little bit at the microphone about when he was talking about his own son. He has another son who's still in combat on the front lines. And so we're going to put that clip on our Facebook page so you can listen to the whole thing. So how did they respond? How did Frederica Wilson respond? How did the press respond? Well, I'll tell you how they responded. Brian Fallon of CNN, Kelly isn't just an enabler of Trump, he's a believer in him. That makes him as odious as the rest. Don't be distracted by the uniform. Lawrence O'Donnell, I am stunned by John Kelly's lies about a black woman who he called an empty barrel. You didn't hear that part. He did refer to her as an empty barrel. So how did Frederica Wilson respond to that? Well, I'll let you listen to a clip. She was did an interview on a local station. Don't see the name of the station. It's Miami 7. Now let's listen to what she had to say.
After the White House chief of staff says he is, quote, brokenhearted, end quote, by Congresswoman Frederica Wilson's actions, this was her response.
The dog can bark at the moon all night long, but it doesn't become an issue until the moon barks back.
The criticism from the White House comes 2 days after the Congresswoman accused the president of being insensitive in his condolence call to the widow of Sergeant LaDavid Johnson. She said she was in the limo with his family when she heard the president say this.
He knew what he was signing up for, but it still hurts.
Family members of the fallen soldier have backed up her account of the call, but the president maintains it's not true.
Didn't say what that congresswoman said. Didn't say it at all.
The congresswoman says she's been getting threatening phone calls from white nationalists and now more harsh words from the White House.
You mean to tell me that I have become so important that the White House is following me and my words? This is amazing. That's amazing. That is absolutely phenomenal. I have to tell my kids that I'm a rock star now.
The congresswoman also doesn't appear to be fazed by those threats. She says the proper authorities have been notified and she has plenty of security, so she plans to keep going about her business. Reporting in Northwest Miami-Dade, Jessica Holly, 7 News.
You know, could I just say, this is an in-politics statement on my part, so warning. This is the kind of thing that stokes racism. Because she is, she becomes the caricature for people of other colors who think this is how black people think. And could I just say that this is just absolutely, absolutely not true. She is an aberration. She is, she may represent a certain faction of the black community, but trust me, She does not represent the black community. I am imagining that there are a lot of people who are listening to what she's saying and cringing. I think one of them, I can just tell you, is Sheriff David Clark. I'm having trouble. You know what? I've read so much this morning that I have probably, maybe 2 inches of paper that I've read to prepare for you this morning. So if I'm stumbling for that one sheet of paper, that's the reason. But Sheriff David Clark was pretty appalled by her, and he went on record. I just can't find his words on it. Because I just want to make the point that, look, we have some really bad people of every race. And I just don't want people to think that Frederica Wilson represents the mindset of black voters. I don't think she does. She represents a faction, but it has nothing to do with color. People can be foolish and be any color, and she's being foolish and also just so self-centered to me in this. And she keeps fighting back, by the way. In John Kelly's statement, part of it that you did not hear, he points out that she was at an FBI building in 2015, and it was dedicated to fallen agents. And during her time at speaking at that dedication ceremony, she was boasting about getting funding for that building. John Kelly said something to that effect. Okay, so Ms. Wilson said that's a lie. She said she wasn't in Congress when that was secured, but the problem is she was. She was in Congress then, and she actually was at the 2015 dedication. There's video of the event. It was published by a Florida newspaper. It shows that she didn't talk about the building's funding, but she did talk about her own efforts to get legislation passed to name the building. And so that's the truth about that. And then the other interesting thing about this, you know, John Kelly called her an empty barrel. So she was interviewed about that, and she says, that's a racist term. I'm thinking about that one, too. We looked it up in the dictionary because I had never heard of an empty barrel. I don't like to be dragged into something like that. The only thing I want to be dragged into right now is getting back our girls who are victims of Boko Haram in Nigeria. So you see that, Ms. Wilson, whatever you say about her, she has an honesty problem. And she's just not rational. I'm just telling you, this is empty barrel is a racist term. Empty barrel, what he's talking about, he's a military man. He's talking about a gun that has no bullets in it. So that's, you know, what he fully meant by that, I can't answer because I'm not a military person. But it's not a racist term. Anybody could be an empty barrel. But she thinks it's a racist term. She doesn't know what it means, but it must be racist. And then she talks about, I'm interested in getting our girls back from Boko Haram in Nigeria. Remember that? Bring our girls back, the tweet that Mrs. Obama started. I mean, this is really what she's focused on right now. So it's just a bizarre story, and it brings discredit. It really does. It brings discredit. And I think, you know, just we have to get better people in Congress, regardless of their color. We have to get better people in Congress, people who are smart and wise and love the country more than they love themselves. Do not politicize the death of our soldiers. And laugh about it and call themselves a rock star because the president is defending himself on this issue. By the way, the Associated Press solicited Gold Star families to help trash the president. They sent out a tweet. Are you a member of a Gold Star family who has had contact with the White House? And then they give it away to share your story. I mean, it's amazing. There's nothing they won't politicize. And so by that, I'm talking about the left. And so here we go. We're in a fight, and we're gonna fight, aren't we? So 2018 is coming up. Let's do something to change things. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.